With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Goeienaand. Hierdie bulletin word grotendeels in beslag geneem deur aankondigings oor die referendum.
Morning, welcome to the special TV1 newscast. White South Africans are flocking to the polls today in one of the country's most historic referendums, a referendum which will decide the future of South Africa.
President of the African National Congress, Nelson Mandela, has issued his strongest warning against a no vote in the referendum. He said any attempt to reimpose apartheid would mean civil war and a massive new international boycott of South Africa.
Sama, kisi.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Opposite me is Jonathan Wilson. And on the pod today, we have Ian Hawkey, football writer for The Sunday Times, author of Feet of the Chameleon, the story of African football, and co-author of Vuvuzela Dawn, 25 sporting stories that shaped a new nation. Ian, a pleasure to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. Well, you've gone for this game from the Africa Cup of Nations qualifying in 1992, Zimbabwe 4, South Africa 1. Why have you chosen this one, Ian?
Because of its historical significance. Personally, I was
I was really looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Zimbabwe in the 80s and was living in Johannesburg at the time of this game. So I was very fond of both national teams. And for South Africa, it was the most important game in their history. It was their first competitive match since being readmitted to FIFA, which they'd been thrown out because of apartheid in the 1960s. Happily, they were playing their neighbours, so there was an element of rivalry as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they went there with a lot of confidence.
Yeah. I mean, the two countries, not enormously dissimilar, I suppose, and some of the histories, there are some similarities as well. But yeah, was there a sense of rivalry between the two nations?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's a bit of a big brother thing from the Zimbabwean point of view, that South Africa is this bigger, more powerful nation and had been an enemy for the 10 years leading up to this game, because Zimbabwe found democracy in 1980. South Africa was very disturbed by this because Rhodesia had been a bit of an ally. And the South African government, certainly during the 80s, tried to destabilize Zimbabwe. So there's all that sort of tension going on. And, you know, there's the far more simple thing that quite a lot of Zimbabweans emigrate to South Africa. And it's a bigger, richer place. And a bit of a bully sometimes.
Yeah, indeed. Two of the big players for Zimbabwe, you know, you could say it was a sort of a golden generation. We'll go on to this, but of course, Bruce Grobbelaar, who we're well aware of in this country, and Peter Nluvu, who was the first African to score in the Premier League. I was found out in a recent quiz that I participated in. So there was a bit of a sort of English, or more specifically Premier League, connection to this game, quite subtly, but it was there.
And we should briefly talk about the pronunciation of his name, just because for some reason... but go on, you say it.
It's Grobbelaar. <That's> it.
Actually, sorry to be pedantic, but it's probably Grobbelaar.
Yeah, okay, anyway. Yeah, fair play.
But the important pronunciation issue is Peter Nluvu.
Yeah.
Say it as you see it, really.
Mm. But we always said Nluv,
yes,
but we forget the Nluvu.
Yes, I don't know how that happened, but yes, in British commentary, Nluv, with the silent U, somehow became...
Yeah.
An established form.
And it means elephant.
Yes, in the Nguni languages, it means.
Which, given
elephant.
He played for Coventry, who have elephants on their badge, seems a thing we was odd that we missed.
But I'm glad we found it now.
Yeah.
On this very podcast, yeah. But yeah, so because the Premier League began in 1992.
The Premier League began on the same weekend as this match.
Incredible.
Now, this is important. Some people think it's important that the Premier League began and history began with it. But, so there's a few interesting connections here. You know, this is before the standardised calendar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a really important African qualifier
football
game
calendar. They weren't using the Julian calendar.
It's still the Gregorian. Yeah.
Anyway, and in the summer, it's mid-August. This match is on the Sunday. The Premier League is launched on the Saturday. Now, Liverpool are the employers of Bruce Grobbelaar and have been for a decade and a half. No, sorry, a decade more or less by then. Great favourite, you know, an absolute English football character. Liverpool have signed David James that summer. So there's an anticipation that Grobbelaar's place in the side is under threat more than ever before.
Coming to the end of his time at Liverpool.
Yes, absolutely. He has not played for Zimbabwe for several years, and for a specific reason. Under the Mugabe government in the mid-1980s, dual nationality was outlawed. For various reasons, but quite a lot to do with British passport holders avoiding their responsibilities as Zimbabwean citizens. Anyway, we don't need to go all the way.
My grandfather's sister was one of those who left Zimbabwe because of that and went to Cape Town.
Right.
So,
a complicated issue.
Yeah, a complicated issue. At which point, Bruce Grobbelaar stopped playing for Zimbabwe. This would have been in the mid-1980s. It had always been difficult for him because of this non-standardised calendar, you know, going to his Liverpool managers, whoever they were, Fagan, etc., and saying, listen, I've just got to nip off to Mozambique. I'll try and be back for the Everton game.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't working. But now, ahead of this fixture... Because it was South Africa and it was a big game for Zimbabwe, and they knew they had the makings of possibly the most useful side in their history. There was a bandwagon for Grobler's recall. Grobler was keen because, you know, the Liverpool situation was not so healthy.
He wanted to get 90 minutes under his belt, essentially. Yeah,
yeah. And actually, to be fair for him, he had in the past been quite committed to Zimbabwe and made some of these sacrifices to play for them. And he was a showman.
Oh yeah.
And there were, you know, there were 50,000 people going to be there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
It was South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, this was a moment for somebody who likes the theatre of sport. But there was this issue. He wouldn't give up his British passport, which he'd taken a long time qualifying for. So there was this suspense: will he or won't he? You know, how is he going to be allowed to play? Could the government bend the rules? The Friday before the game, the Home Office in Zimbabwe announced that Bruce Grobbelaar's citizenship is valid.
Mm.
So Bruce is allowed to play.
Yeah.
And up front, you have this still teenaged Peter Ndlovu, who is a figure of English football. He'd been pretty successful in his first season, just before the Premier League was launched, with Coventry. So you've got these two figures at either end of the team.
Yeah, and Peter Ndlovu, he was discovered with Coventry City having a pre-season tour of Zimbabwe. Seems quite an odd thing to have a pre-season tour, you know, especially in those days, but of Zimbabwe as well. But having spoken to Kevin Gallagher in the past, he said that, was it Highlanders?
The big Bulawayo team.
Yeah, yeah, they were playing sort of various sides. And actually Coventry had heard about Adam, Peter's brother, who of course was a player in that side, played up front, and he was the one they were going to go and see. But they saw this younger brother of his and thought, oh, actually, we fancy a bit of that. And of course they signed him.
Yeah, and, which was a pretty intrepid thing to do at the time.
Yeah, yeah. Mm, no, absolutely. But I find the Grobbelaar thing fascinating. I mean, because looking at his record, you'd think that a player like that playing for a country which hasn't produced many players, 32 caps. You would think he would have, I appreciate that the travel was not as efficient as it is now and all that kind of stuff in the calendar, as you say. But of course, there's this other reason going on which sort of makes sense. But in the Zimbabwe squad, am I right in saying there were sort of domestic football rivalries going on as well?
Yes, the dominant ones are regional. So Bulawayo, Matabeleland, Harare, Mashonaland.
Uh-huh.
And it can get pretty tricky. And there's always stories about selection bias, especially when there's a local manager in charge of the national team.
So how did it fit with Peter Ndlovu and Bruce Grobbelaar coming from England? You know, they were superstars, presumably, in their homeland. Does that help kind of unite the side, or do other players get a little bit sort of jealous, or how do they fit in?
That's a good question. They appreciated having the know-how of these two footballers. And both of them, across the years, assumed, you know, sort of leadership roles. Grobbelaar dipped into his own pocket sometimes when times were hard. Peter Ndlovu certainly did that later on.
Mm. Which is a sadly common thing, isn't it? I mean, George Weah.
Well, Weah's the, yeah.
Yeah, totally yeah, funded the Liberia team at the in Mali in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And in some senses, they're slightly empowered in a way to make demands of the federation, whether it be, and I'm speculating, there's a selection bias here, I think you've got this one wrong, you know, if you are
but they've got a bit more sway.
And that can create issues. I mean, Samuel Eto'o's relationship with Cameroon was never easy.
Roy Keane's with the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, but I mean, Roy Keane wasn't literally paying for, you know, his teammates' breakfast
sure.
things. You know, it's...
No, but I take the point you're saying. Their manager, Reinhard Fabisch, am I pronouncing that correctly? Yeah. Was he a bit of a character?
Yes, he was. And I don't want to generalise, but we've seen these characters before in African football.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of bossy, brash European. And I do remember his outfit that day. It's quite a warm day. But it was, you know, it was winter, but it was very dry. But yeah, I mean, he did look like he'd walked out of, you know, Las Vegas in 1975 or something. Yeah, it's a great big shade. but he was Zimbabweans still look back on him as a really one of their better managers.
What about the South African side? As you say, first time that they are competing for a long time because of that ban, because of their apartheid and so on. What was their football scene? Was it the domestic league? Was it in okay nick considering, or was it in tatters really?
No, that's a good question. It's a very vibrant culture. Very, very dominated by three big clubs really, Kaizer Chiefs, Orlando Pirates and Mamelodi Sundowns from the Pretoria area. There was isolation, which is what happened between 1960 and 1992, had all sorts of effects. The exposure to the world game was really limited, and I can't emphasise that enough. There's several issues to this. If you're a South African footballer, it was, however brilliant it was, really, really hard to go abroad unless you had a British passport, something which would, occasional white players would have that. Because the country was under sanctions, getting a visa to do anything was really hard. So, even the very good players, they're pretty stuck there. There's very little football from outside South Africa broadcast there even, because there are sanctions for all sorts of broadcasting and artistic bodies. So it's the 1990 World Cup was the first one that was seen live at any length in South Africa. And that made a massive difference, especially because of Cameroon. That was a huge event. And a couple of months before this first competitive match, South Africa, having a national team, which had to be assembled. There wasn't a culture of a national team. And clearly, in the past, there were decades of cultures of people of different colour not being allowed to play together. Cameroon had anyway come to celebrate South Africa's return and played three friendlies, one draw, one defeat, one win, or rather neat. Cameroon treated them as friendlies, I would say.
But Cameroon,
my observation.
Because in 1990, they were the big side on the continent.
Absolutely. And it was...
And obviously still are one of the big sides.
But, I find that these cases of isolation football fascinating, and this is probably the longest that we've seen. But, I guess you had, in England, simultaneous with the end of this, you had the end of a Heysel ban, and we saw in 7 years, English football fell behind... It took a decade to sort that out. I guess the other big example is Argentina when Perón imposed a sort of de facto isolation because he was terrified of, he'd seen what happened with when Brazil failed to win the 50 World Cup and was terrified of possibility of defeat. And Argentina had this great arrogance and this great sense of, we are the best in the world. Look, we go and watch a game on a Saturday or a Sunday and it's brilliant. And then they go to the 58 World Cup and struggle to beat Northern Ireland, get smashed by West Germany, and absolutely destroyed by Czechoslovakia. So, did South Africa have any sort of illusions to how difficult it would be to get back?
No, and after they've arrived in Harare, they get a rude awakening. But just some context on the isolation and the effects of it, and the concept of a national team. You see, that was a little bit alien. I remember their manager. Telling me, I've had players come up to me and say, if I play for South Africa, do I have to stop playing for my club?
And this is not that long ago.
No, exactly.
We're talking about the 1990s
But the other story, that manager was not the manager who went to Zimbabwe, because he was an Englishman named Jeff Butler. And he got the job. He'd been very successful with Kaizer Chiefs. He was probably the right man for the job of new national team manager. But unfortunately, he'd been lying on his CV. Mm. He'd given the playing details of somebody called Jeff Butler, who had played for Norwich City.
Oh my goodness.
This was pre-Google, And some magnificent sleuthing from the Star, the newspaper in Johannesburg, contacted the real Jeff Butler.
Absolutely outrageous.
Anyway, so his assistant, Stan Shabalala, was thrust into the job and was the man who would take South Africa to Zimbabwe. And he was a little bit bullish and a little bit too bullish. There was a lot of, the continent doesn't know what's going to hit it.
Yeah. Presumably the economic advantages South Africa had, I guess we did see that towards the middle and end of the decade, But presumably there's an assumption that that would kick in eventually.
Absolutely, and quite rightly. And also, if your culture was Kaiser Chiefs and Orlando Pirates, then you felt pretty good about your football, you know, and there were big crowds and you could get well paid. Although it was mixed. For example, Steve Compella, who was in this team that went to Harare, he was still working as a school teacher. You know, some of them would have been full-time footballers, but, you know, there was a mix.
I mean, there were recognisable players in the South. I mean, names we know now. I mean, Phil Masinga, I guess, is one that English fans will know.
Lucas Kadebe.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But I mean, Dr. Kamala was in this team, wasn't he, as well?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Who, you know, you talk to South Africans of a certain age and he's the one they revere. So it was
talk to Zimbabweans of a certain age, and they and again they say, come on nurse Kumalo.
Yeah. All right, chaps, let's have a quick break and then we'll talk about the actual match itself.
Quasi e calentante vicina. Quem tá a pini e a passa na sala Zimbabwe e quem manque. Mutsankana Francis wa nomoro ya botshelela ka tlhakoreng la Zimbabwe. Francis o katabe ya tlhopisana sa Zimbabwe butlenga ka ntlha eo sethubathuba lesilo a ileng a re o ele ka empa ya mosola ya bitswa ka letsante. Francis Shoha.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Ke boroko tsi Zimbabwe kana ka di 18 mi tsaka da fitile ke wa baya. Yiti la kinta ya bona ya Zimbabwe.
Welcome back to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. Right then, so Zimbabwe, they were in an African Cup of Nations qualifying group with Zambia, South Africa and Mauritius. And of course, you know, South Africa and Zambia would eventually go through, of course, but they were the bigger sides they were facing. So they're at home to South Africa, as you've given the context, it's a big game. And it was a pretty good start from Zimbabwe. They were pretty much on the front foot and they went 1-0 up after 8 minutes.
Yes, a lovely goal. I mean, it was a great atmosphere. Mm. It was in the National Stadium, which is vast, and 50-odd thousand there. Mm-hmm. And they've been there a long time.
And you know what you said about Bruce Grobbelaar earlier? You can tell when he runs out, there is, it's just the way he runs. There's such showmanship about him, and that embraces that that atmosphere. Because as you see, it sounded on the YouTube clip of the or they've got the whole game on YouTube, it does sound quite something, even on the grainy kind of footage and sound.
Yeah, it was, and it was really driving through Harare on the way to. I mean, I was quite moved because I lived in Harare and I knew that this was a big deal.
And you were working on the game, were you?
Yes, yeah, I was. I would have been doing that probably for BBC Africa Service. Yeah,
there we are. So yeah, they go 1-0 up.
Yeah, they go, and it's a really nicely taken goal. And
it's quite a weird free kick, isn't it? To have a free kick sort of not that far outside the box,
shooting opportunity,
and just ping it at 90 yards to the goal and ping it straight back again.
Yes, yeah,
but
yeah.
It works.
Yeah, so I mean, I would say as you will have seen from seeing the television coverage, the pitch is awful.
It is.
It's very dry. It's the dry season. There's never enough rain in Zimbabwe, and you know the bounce is yeah. And you can see that, I mean, South Africa aren't coming from a country where there's beautiful lawns, but you can see that they're unnerved at the beginning. Lucas, who's the best player in that team, probably, he misplaces a pass terribly, and you can sense a few nerves. Then they go, as you say, 1-0 down. Lovely goal from Vitalis Takawira, who was really good that day. He was sort of the Ndlovu brothers' sidekick, but he was special.
Yeah, the goal I want to talk about. Well, there's two goals in this game that the static goals. A chap called Gumbo on 19 minutes hammers one in from possibly 30 yards.
Yeah,
it's very Barry Horn.
Don't cheapen it with that.
No, but I mean,
it's a bit of a swinger, right?
It flies in the top corner. Mm. I'm not saying he struck that entirely cleanly. I'm not sure he knew where that was going.
Look, I've never seen any other moment from Gumbo's career, to be quite frank, so I don't know what the man was capable of.
30 season like that.
But perhaps, Ian, you would be able to shed more light.
I certainly know that once he'd done it, he tried it again a couple of times. but I always will defend a footballer's right to claim skill at that sort of goal if the pitch is bad, because you don't know how it's going to bounce.
So, yeah. You know. Well, the ball was the ball's in the air,
it's fantastic.
It's a glorious goal.
Rocket.
Yeah, and the crowd. I mean, they must have enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
You know,
and the atmosphere was wonderful.
Was there expectation? Because as you say, you've got two Premier League stars in there. This is probably dubbed their golden generation, or perhaps we're dubbing it that. You know. There must have been expectation, surely.
I think Zimbabwe were pleased that they had, you know, real strength at either end of the pitch. But they also were, you know, South Africa were capable of spreading this aura of, you should see our league. And of course, some Zimbabweans had seen their league. You know, Kaizer Chiefs would occasionally go to Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
30,000 people would appear. Mm. You know, I think there was some trepidation, and South Africa came, especially Stan Shabalala, the manager, with all sorts of mind games, which
which we love. Yeah. Well, and only a couple of minutes later, they got themselves back in the game when the ball was smashed home from close range.
Well, there's South Africa. The scoreline, there are phases of the game when South Africa you think they might come back into it. Grobbelaar makes an extremely good save.
Yeah.
From Phil Masinga, later of Leeds United, which is a sort of turning point because that's at 1-0 down, and Gumbo produces his piece of magic.
But then 2-1,
yes, and then immediately they come back, slightly a bit of a sort of penalty box pinball, although quite a nice run from Sam Kambule, who's. He's a very attacking right back. He's had a difficult time against Ndlovu already on his flank, but he comes through, plays a 1-2 with Dr. Kumalo, and sort of scrambles it past Grobbelaar.
Yeah, but for a clean hit though on that surface, you know, you've always got to kind of applaud it. You know, he really does hammer it home. And then, I mean, I suppose for the rest of the half, I mean, again, watching it on the kind of grainy footage, it seemed like it was sort of fairly kind of standard. You know, Zimbabwe seemed to be near enough in control.
Can I suggest a commentary on that game? I know it's not in a language I understand. Yeah. Oh, the commentary seemed quite bad.
Oh, it's Sam Amasondo. No way. No, it's brilliant. It's Sama Masondo.
Yeah, Jonathan, how can you not appreciate
it
that?
It seemed quite hesitant, but maybe it's just a language with lots of
no,
gaps.
No, I think I would concede that that's the YouTube one is the South African commentary featuring Sama Masondo, man with the best voice in the history of civilization.
Yeah, he's got a good voice.
I suspect this is a story of isolation as well. I suspect some of the knowledge of the Zimbabwean players was probably
right, okay,
not as it would be in our age of internet research.
It's, it's a strange thing, you know, when you watch a lot of football with foreign commentary, and you know, there's some languages you understand a bit of, and some languages you don't know at all, but you still somehow you get the rhythm of it and you can pick out the names from it. I found it really hard with this.
But then there's different. Different culture, different time, different style of commentary.
It also, I would emphasise that nicknames is everything.
Yeah.
I think I'd refer to Sam Kambule, yeah?
Yeah.
He is Sam Kambule, but he's Iwi Kambule. So
right.
Anyone else?
Iwi meaning?
Not quite sure, actually.
Right,
yeah.
I'm not sure where it comes from.
And Takawiri, who got the first goal's nickname, Digital, right?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Any idea
again,
why? Yeah.
Because he was on email back then. So at halftime it's 2-1, and then into the second half, and the third goal for Zimbabwe comes 4 minutes after halftime. It's a penalty.
It's a penalty. I think slightly soft, but that was my memory.
I couldn't work out what he was given for at all.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, if you'd listened to the commentator, it would have become pretty obvious.
But I do remember, even at the timing start, that there wasn't a lot of protest from the South Africans, and I suppose in retrospect, you could also perhaps interpret this as sort of unworldliness. You know,
it's an interesting point. Yeah.
Go on, Lucas Radebe, get in the referee's face.
Well, they would soon sort of catch up, I'm sure, in years to come. But Peter and Luvu takes the penalty. Yeah. Lovely side-footed penalty to the top corner.
Yeah, absolutely.
No messing around. Yeah. Yeah. So, he was only a teenager at the time. Did he see, the mere fact that he's put the ball down, I know he's a forward player, but did he feel like a leader? Was that a kind of, obviously got Grobler at the other end, but in terms of driving the team forward?
That's a good question.
And he had an older brother in the team as well, so there's that family dynamic as well.
Yeah. The actually missing from that team, and I assume it was because of a dispute, because he was always having his way, was Moses Chunga, who in the pre Lovu era was the national hero, a rather sort of, very creative midfielder.
And then 9 minutes later, and Luvu gets his second. It's a delightful goal.
It's fabulous.
It's one of the joys of doing this podcast is when you research these things and you find little nuggets, incredible stories and so on and so forth. But you also see goals that you've never previously seen. And that second and Luvu goal is just gorgeous. Yeah,
every bit of it is brilliant.
Yeah.
So three components to it. There's the pace to kind of to get onto the ball. It's sort of a punt down the line, down the channel. Down the right channel, his pace to get there. Then there's a skill to wobble through two defenders. And then there's just
the finish.
The calmness and it's such a, it's like, there's a Dennis Bergkamp quality to the finish.
Yes, absolutely.
It just sort of, everything slows down and you just the side foot into the space and it's from a narrow angle.
And it's
and you
a
sort
hard
of
angle,
think,
yeah.
Oh, maybe the keeper's a fault. No, it's just a brilliant, brilliant
But the
finish.
Way he shimmies, you know that thing where people who like to kind of do that thing with their feet where they quickly, you almost kick it on one foot and then you kick it with the other. So if you're playing in the park with your mates and you sort of take a penalty and you go to kick it one way, the goalkeeper dives, it's like a little shuffle of the feet. He almost does that really, like just touches it with one foot and then onto the left and slots it home.
And
it's a fantastic piece of skill. Especially on that pitch as well.
Yes, exactly.
To have a presence of mind then, you've got the ball, you've done the bit of skill, the goal's there for you. And 3-1 is make backable, 4-1, you've won the game.
Yeah.
And to have, as a teenager, to have the calmness, presence of mind to finish like that.
Yeah.
It's just an extraordinary
goal. Yeah, it's a great goal. I implore anybody to go and check that out. Because I think on YouTube, the only footage of the game is the whole game, you know. So
it's 58 minutes in, so you can find it.
So do that and enjoy the commentary as well. And they would run out 4-1 winners. And it really was without too much of a fuss.
Absolutely. They were in control. I think South Africa looked slightly more tired at the end, but there was some. Grobler had made that good save in the first half, and then he did some useful time wasting at the end.
No, surely not. But what did that result mean then? What was the reaction?
Well, I think from two sides, it really was a breakthrough moment for Peter Ndlovu as an international. You know, it was. I remember there was a sort of discussion afterwards among some journalists, and there was people were saying he is the most exciting player in the region. And the region's quite important. It means the south, and that would include Zambia, who had Kalusha Bwalya.
Yeah.
So you know, there was a lot of pride, and I think it was a breakthrough moment for Peter Ndlovu with the national team. And you know, they socked it to South Africa. Mm. The South African, they were quite shell shocked. After the game, I went out for a meal in Harare with some of the players, including Lucas Radebe, and there was a lot of head shaking and quite a lot of owning up that, you know, our preparation was bad. Some of the noise around it was unhelpful.
Meaning from the manager.
Yes, yeah, and I, possibly the media as well.
But do you think that result, you know, would it have helped them in the long run? Did they needed a bit of a shake-up like that, I suppose?
Well, yeah, it got worse before it got better.
Well, yeah.
Because they had World Cup qualifiers at the same time, different competition. Yeah. And they went to Nigeria and were beaten 4-0.
Right.
Absolutely humiliated. And this nickname arose. They were the 4x4s because they kept losing by four goals.
That's not what you want.
Yeah. I mean, that was a very good Nigeria, though. I mean,
it was.
Building up to the 94 World Cup, 94 Cup of Nations.
Yeah. But then, of course, Zimbabwe expectation must rise then.
Yes. I mean, this was the Nations Cup qualifiers. Neither of these teams got through. And the team that did get through, and that is another story, was Zambia, who, as you know, most of the squad died in the middle of
so, I mean,
the final
qualifiers, Zimbabwe need to beat Zambia, but the Zambia team 3 months earlier has been wiped out.
Yeah.
And they're 10 minutes from winning it, and then Kalusha Bwalya, greatest player.
Yeah, yeah. And beats Grobbelaar and header.
And header.
And yeah, he hadn't been on the plane because he was coming from Eindhoven.
Mm.
So he was, you know, taking a different route and survived. And
an extraordinary story. But they did qualify.
In the same phase, of course, the World Cup qualifiers are going on. And Zimbabwe... That's when you see the potential of this Zimbabwe team. They go almost all the way and then lose amid all sorts of disputes to Cameroon at the.
If you've got to go yonder and get a result, you're going to struggle.
Yes,
It's a tough.
Well, African qualifying is very tough anyway because there's so few places, and so if you're one of the smaller nations. To get through, you've got to get through that first round, which is an achievement to be celebrated in itself. And then you've got to get through the final round, which is, I mean, it is really a tough ask.
But I mean,
and the travel as well, especially in those days. I mean, you know, an away game really is an away game.
Yeah.
But the Zambia story, quite apart from anything else, it just shows how difficult that travel was.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, they're on a military plane, has to refuel in Libreville. That's not something European teams have to deal with.
Yeah.
And but going to Yaounde, that stadium in I've only been there for a club game when it was nowhere near full, but it's an amazing stadium. You sort of imagine what it must be like when it's when it is full and they desperately need a result.
Absolutely. But there's an amazing little stories from Zimbabwe's attempt to qualify for the World Cup that year. Am I right in saying that Grobbelaar was talking about it going away to, was it Angola who had a civil war at the time?
Oh, yes, yeah, so yeah.
And as they were landing, they were having to circle the plane because they thought someone was trying to shoot the plane down and all this kind of stuff.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that sort of thing happened and those sort of stories arose. And sometimes there's a distinction between the...
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Angola.
I don't want to.
Angola is. I mean, I was there in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a pretty tough, difficult place then.
Oh, I'm sure.
And the war was long over.
Yeah.
So to go there while the war was actually on.
Mm-hmm. And the story of going away to Egypt. That was Jonathan, I know you've had interesting encounter or two going away and seeing Egypt play.
Well, mainly with Ian, to be fair.
But this was when the game was sort of...
Well, that's right.
Null and void or something?
Yeah, the game was voided and Zimbabwe and Egypt... Now, this wasn't at the final stage for qualifying for the 98 World Cup, I think. Anyways, Zimbabwe also had a decent campaign for that. But yes, they to settle their game with Egypt, it was yeah, it was abandoned. Mm-hmm. They appealed to have it replayed, and it was replayed in France.
Yeah,
and it was a missile being thrown.
Yes, that's right. It was a missile. Yeah,
yeah.
Grobbelaar, a particular target.
And he had one of his finest nights, didn't he?
Yes, yeah.
When they drew 0-0, was it in Lyon in France?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And this is the thing, you know, again, African qualification, especially back in those days, it was very, very different how it played out, you know. The travel and the sort of...
Well, and you've got the chaos of your own federation, I mean.
Exactly, yeah. You know,
yes. I mean, yeah, the trail of unpaid bills, hotel receipts, somebody's flight from Europe...
Yeah.
They turn up at the airport and, this hasn't been paid by the Federation.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Not go to play the game or write the check?
Yeah. But Zimbabwe, they eventually qualified for the first major tournament in 2004, the Africa Cup of Nations. And I think they've been there, what, three or four times in the first round every time?
Four times, I think, because they were there 2006 and they've been...
And they were there last time.
Right. Yeah. But it was always out in the first round. You know, they've never really imposed themselves on a tournament, although achievement to get there, of course. But this side, or that side, rather, in the early 90s, with Nluvu and Grobbelaar and so on, it must be fondly remembered.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, known as the dream team, and some, you know, some really bad things have happened to Zimbabwe football since. There was a terrible match fixing episode involving the national team, or in some cases, a fake national team, and it's hard to see how they can get that close again. But then again, you're quite often surprised by the emergence of
the other tragedy, of course, is the car crash in 2012.
Yes, yeah,
with the Nluvu brothers.
Yeah,
with Adam died.
Adam and Nluvu lost his life, and as did a woman passenger in the car. Peter Nluvu was in the car as well, and had been at the wheel. He was accused of being responsible for it, but after a trial, there was enough evidence. And, you know, he lost his brother.
Very sad indeed. Very sad, yeah. But going back to the dream team, do people feel that it didn't quite live up to expectation? Do they feel that ultimately they sort of failed, or do they think, oh no, we love them because actually they made us hope, they gave us a bit of hope for a bit?
I think there was huge frustration after Cameroon pipped them for 1994. Do people expect Zimbabwe to reach more Africa Cup of Nations finals? Yes.
I mean, and they did with the 24 teams, they surely will.
Yes,
I
mean, do they expect them to reach the World Cup? Maybe once in a generation, if you're very lucky.
And again, with 48 teams, maybe there's more of a chance.
Yes.
And of course, South Africa recovered at the next Cup of Nations, so...
Well, the aftermath of this is that South Africa end up winning the next Africa Cup of Nations, for which they qualified by being emergency hosts. But yeah, things get a lot better after 1993.
Mm-hmm. But there's still,
and Zimbabwe don't even qualify for that.
There's still a sense with South African football, isn't there, that it hasn't really capitalised on the advantages it had. That, you know, from 96, there was that spell where every tournament they were one stage lower. So they lost in the final, they lost in the semi-finals, they lost in the quarter-finals, they finished third in the group, they finished fourth in the group, they didn't qualify.
Oh, absolutely.
And for a country of that wealth with a league, you know, in African terms, that strong, is really a profound failure.
Yeah, yeah. The decline over the last 15, 20 years of South Africa has been really spectacular when you look at it. And yes, as you say, there's a big, vibrant football culture there. There are resources, there's money. You know, the television money and the sponsorship that the Premier Soccer League in South Africa gets is huge compared with anywhere else in the continent, or most other places.
You think of the stadium now, of course, since the World Cup, of course, is an obvious one to say, but there we are. Ian, it's been fascinating talking to you about this. Thank you very much indeed. For more stories like that, do check out theblizzard.co.uk, of course. But yes, Ian, a pleasure as always to have you on the pod. Jonathan, nice one, my old pal. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next week for another great game from the world of football.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.